Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember in Washington. Hundreds of thousands of children become infected with the AIDS virus every year. Today on the program, we report on the discovery of a protein in breast milk that may protect babies against the human immunodeficiency virus, also called HIV. But first, the United Nations Children's Fund recently praised Ethiopia for reaching one of the Millennium Development Goals on child survival. UNICEF officials say Ethiopia has reduced its number of child deaths by more than two-thirds. Faith Lapidus has more.
Between 1990 and 2012, the country reported a 67% drop in the number of children dying before the age of five. Ethiopia's Minister of Health, Kitsete Berhan Admasu, welcomed the good news, but he admitted that even with the improvement, Ethiopia is considered a high mortality country.
If you look at the absolute number of children dying in Ethiopia, it's still, you know, huge. You know, we have committed to end all preventable child and maternal diseases in a generation by 2035. And we have developed a roadmap to, you know, reach that ambitious target.
Diarrhea, pneumonia, and malaria are the leading causes of death among young children in Ethiopia. In 1990, the country's death rate for children under five was one of the highest in the world. It was 204 deaths for every 1,000 births. The rate is now at 68 per 1,000. This means that hundreds of thousands of Ethiopian children who might have died in earlier years now reach their fifth birthday. Ethiopia is one of four African countries to have reached a Millennium Development Goal. The other three are Liberia, Malawi, and Tanzania. One of the reasons for Ethiopia's success is its health extension program. Because of it, 38,000 people were employed to bring health care services to a large part of the rural population. Peter Salama is UNICEF's representative to Ethiopia. He says Ethiopia's plan of action can serve as an example for other countries.
Several other African countries have come to do study tours, including delegations from Togo, Guinea, Namibia, I believe, all came to really study the health extension program and to see how they could replicate this critical lesson of bringing health care to the doorstep of the rural population.
The United Nations first announced the Millennium Development Goals 13 years ago. The goals were meant to help countries pay more attention to issues such as fighting extreme poverty. Progress on the Millennium Development Goal of reducing child deaths is slow in most countries. Only 13 of 61 countries are in a position to meet the goal. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Steve Ember in Washington. You're listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Now we turn to a medical discovery that could help protect babies against HIV, the virus responsible for the disease AIDS. Here is June Sims.
Hundreds of thousands of children become infected with the AIDS virus every year. These boys and girls are born to mothers who have HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus. Infection takes place during pregnancy or from breastfeeding. Recently, scientists identified a protein in breast milk that suppresses the virus. The protein may even protect babies from becoming infected. Now, experts say the discovery could lead to new ways to protect babies whose mothers are infected with HIV. To prevent infection, doctors give antiretroviral drugs to both mothers and their babies. That has greatly reduced the number of infections. But experts say that even without anti-AIDS drugs, only a small percentage of babies become infected through breast milk. Sally Permar is a professor of pediatrics and immunology at Duke University in North Carolina. She says breastfed babies appear to resist infection.
It's actually remarkable that despite the infant being exposed to the virus multiple times daily for up to 2 years of their life, actually only 10% of those babies will become infected.
The low rate of infection was of great interest to researchers, including Sally Permar. She led an effort to identify a substance in breast milk that may protect babies from infection. Her team directed its attention to a protein called tenascin C, also called TNC. It is known to be involved in the process of healing wounds, but what purpose it serves in breast milk is not known. The researchers exposed the TNC protein from breast milk of uninfected women to HIV. The protein linked up to the virus and made it harmless. Antiretroviral drugs remain effective in limiting the passing of HIV from mother to baby. But Professor Permar and her team suggest that TNC could be used in places where costly drug treatments are often not available.
The issues are access to the drugs as well as monitoring. There's issues of toxicity and antiretroviral drug resistance. And so we think that alternative strategies may be needed to completely eliminate infant transmission.
She suggests that TNC could be given to babies before breastfeeding to provide additional protection against HIV. She adds that the protein is safe because it is already a natural part of human milk. This may avoid the problem of HIV becoming resistant to antiretroviral drugs. The team reported its findings in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I'm June Sims.
And that's our program for today. Be sure to join us at this same time tomorrow as Karen Leggett reports on methods to help farmers protect their soil and crops from damage. I'm Steve Ember. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. 1 week has passed since lawmakers in Ukraine voted to oust Viktor Yanukovych as president. Mr. Yanukovych told a press conference on Friday that he was forced to leave Ukraine, but denied being ousted. "Nobody has overthrown me," he said. "I was compelled to leave Ukraine due to a direct threat to my life." Mr. Yanukovych spoke in Russian to reporters in the Russian city of Rostov-on-Don. He announced plans to return and fight for his country. He said he wants to fight for Ukraine's future against those who took control of the country through terror and fear. Also on Friday, Ukraine's new government accused Russian forces of carrying out a military invasion and occupation at two airports. Interior Minister Arsen Avakov wrote on his Facebook page that armed men were blocking the Belbek airport in the Crimean port of Sevastopol. Russia has a naval base in the area. Unidentified men were also guarding the international airport in Simferopol, the Crimean capital. As of late Friday, the airport was still open. But all of the activity has some people concerned about their well-being. Those guarding the airport appeared a day after unidentified gunmen took control of government buildings in Crimea. The crisis began a week ago when Ukraine's parliament voted to oust President Yanukovych. The vote followed 3 months of street protests. The demonstrations began in November after the president backed out of a trade deal with the European Union. His move was seen as an effort to strengthen relations with Russia instead of getting closer to Europe. The protests were peaceful at first, but then turned violent. More than 75 people were reported killed in the week before the president was ousted. Parliament wasted no time in replacing Mr. Yanukovych. Lawmakers elected Parliamentary Speaker Oleksandr Turchynov as the country's acting leader. He immediately announced plans to form a new government. Mr. Turchynov said it would lead the country until new presidential elections in May. Valery Pekar is a Ukrainian researcher and political commentator. He said the events of the past week are Ukraine's final break with its recent past.
We call it the government of the national trust because it's a transitional government which will keep the country alive during preparation of the free, transparent elections which we need.
This week, Mr. Turchynov accused the former government of stealing billions of dollars from the state treasury. On Friday, Switzerland ordered restrictions on any money in Swiss banks that belongs to Mr. Yanukovych and the people traveling with him. The Swiss government wants to avoid the stealing of money that belongs to the Ukrainian public. Austria also said it was freezing the bank accounts of 18 Ukrainians after being asked to do so by Ukraine's new government. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember.
Now, the special English program, American Stories. Our story today is called Judge. It was written by Walter D. Edmonds. We will hear part one of the story today and part two next week. Here is Harry Monroe with our story.
When Charlie Haskell died, he left a wife and nine children. They lived on a small piece of land in a house with four rooms. John was the oldest boy. He was 16 years old and tall for his age. After his father died, John's mother told him he would have to take care of the family. So John went into the cornfield behind the small house. There was very little corn and very many weeds. His family needed corn, and corn needed room to grow. John bent down and began pulling out the weeds. When John came in for supper that night, he told his mother that he had cleaned half the cornfield. She was surprised and immediately went outside to look at what he had done. While she was looking at the field, she remembered that her husband had sold some corn to Judge Doan. She also remembered that they had never collected the money for the corn. She told John to go to the judge's house right away to get it. John was afraid of Judge Doan. The judge was the richest man in town. He owned a lot of land, and everyone owed him money. His stone house looked like a palace. John went to the judge's house and knocked on the door. A servant opened it right away and brought John into the judge's office. Judge Doan was sitting at his desk. He was a very big man with a red face, long white hair, and serious blue eyes. John stood with his back to the door. He held his hat in both hands. "Hello, John," said the judge. "What do you want?" John told the judge about the money. "Oh, yes," said the judge. "I had forgotten about that. I'm sorry." He stood up and reached into his pocket. Slowly he pulled out a large brown leather wallet. He opened it and took out a new dollar bill and handed it to John. Then he sat down at his desk again. "How are you and your family doing?" he asked. "All right, sir," John said. "I wouldn't have bothered you about this money, but we needed it." "That is all right," the judge said slowly. "I should have remembered it. I didn't think of it, because your father owed me money. He owed me $40. John was so shocked, he couldn't think of anything to say. $40 was a fortune for him and his family. The judge looked at John for a few moments. "How old are you, boy?" he asked.
16, sir.
"And when do you think you will pay me back the $40 your father owed me?" he asked. John's face got very white.
"I don't know, sir," he whispered.
The judge stood up. "I hope you are not like your father," he said. "He was a lazy man who never worked hard." He held out his hand to the boy. "Good luck to you," he said,
as he shook John's hand. Then he walked with him to the front door and said good night. During the summer, John worked on other people's farms for 40 cents a day. At first, nobody wanted him. People remembered how lazy his father had been, and they gave the work to other boys. But John was a hard worker, and he began to get jobs. Soon he was working on other people's farms 6 days of the week. He worked on his own family's land every evening and all day Sunday. That summer, for the first time, the little farm had enough fruits and vegetables to feed John and his family. There was even enough for them to sell at the market. John used to wonder how his father had always found time to go fishing. John had very little time to fish that summer, and when he did have time to relax, he thought about the $40 he owed Judge Doan. Then he would go out and look for more work. At first, he gave all the money he earned to his mother. But then he began saving a few pennies every time he was paid. By the end of August, he had saved a dollar. As he held the money in his hand, he realized for the first time that someday he might be able to pay back all the money he owed to the judge. By the middle of October, John had saved $5 to give to the judge. So one night, after supper, he went back to the judge's big stone house. He found the judge sitting in his office. "Sit down, John," the judge said. "I know you have worked hard this summer. I'll be glad to help you if you need some money for the winter." John felt his face become very hot. "I didn't come here to ask for anything, Judge," he said. He pushed his hand deep into his pocket and pulled out his money. "I wanted to pay back some of the money I owe you. It is only $5, but here it is." And he handed the money to the judge. Judge Doan counted the money. Then he went to his desk and put the money in a drawer. "Where will you find work this winter, John?" "I don't know, sir." Several days later, John's mother asked him to go into town to buy cloth. She wanted to make some warm clothing for the children for the coming winter. On his way into town, John met Seth Whitefeather. Seth was an Indian who also worked on the farms during the summer. But in the winter, Seth traveled north and disappeared into the woods. As they walked toward the town, John told Seth that he had no work for the winter. Seth told John that he went into the woods every winter to hunt and trap wild animals for their fur. Seth said he earned $200 last winter. $200, John thought. He turned shyly to the Indian. Could I come with you this year? He asked. Seth looked at John without smiling. Have you got a gun and some animal traps? John shook his head. No, he said. How much would that cost? $75, the Indian replied. If you can get those things, I will teach you how to catch the animals. I am leaving in 2 weeks. Only one person could help John. That night, he went to the judge's house. The house was dark, except for a light that was shining in the judge's office. John could see the judge sitting at his desk. The boy tapped at the window. Judge Doan opened it. When he saw the boy's thin face, he asked, "What do you want?" "Please, Judge," said John, "could I talk to you?" The judge shut the window and opened the front door. They went back to his office. "Be as quick as you can," the judge said. "It is late." John had never been so frightened in his life. He couldn't think or speak for a few moments. "Talk, boy," the judge barked at him. So John told him about Seth and the animal furs and asked the judge for the money. $75, the judge said. "You're asking me to lend that much money to a 16-year-old boy just like that?" "I could do it with $50, John said. "But if you think it is a bad idea, I won't bother you any more." "Shut up," the judge said. "If I'm going to lend you money, I want to be sure you don't starve to death in the woods. Then I would never get my money back, would I?" The judge looked hard at John for a few moments. "What about this Seth?" he asked. "Can you trust him?" John nodded his head. "He has always been nice to me," he said. The judge pulled out a piece of paper from his desk and wrote something on it. "Sign this," he said when he had finished writing. "It says you promised to pay me back $75 by next spring." John was embarrassed to tell the judge that he didn't know how to read or write. "Put a mark at the bottom instead of your name," the judge said. "Here is the money. Don't lose it." He walked John to the door and shook the boy's hand. "Good luck. Come here as soon as you get back next spring."
You have heard part one of the American story, Judge. Your storyteller was Harry Monroe. The story was written by Walter D. Edmonds and adapted for Special English by Donna DeSanctis. Harcourt, Brace & Company published it in 1941 in Americans All, Stories of American Life. Edited by Benjamin Heydrich. This story is copyrighted. All rights reserved. This is Shirley Griffith.